offering and most loving pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari. We are in the 10th discourse in the 1991 Summer Course series. This was a discourse delivered by Swami on the 30th of May, 1991. We are a little past the halfway mark, and this discourse is about the Taittiriya Upanishad. Last time around, Swami was speaking about the relationship between a guru and the students, the kind of advice that the gurus in those days would give to their students even as they would graduate, and how the absence of such counsel has led to a lot of confusion in the society today is what Swami was speaking about. There was the last part in that clip which we played, we thought we'll start our discussion with, but before that and before we listen to what Swami has to say for this week, let's invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem.
And I think last week most of our time was taken by the discussion on the need to revere and respect one's parents, as Swami has said on various occasions, how Swami would emphasize on that. Because that was one of the first lessons which would be imparted to the students in the Taittiriya Upanishad, where they say, Matradevo Bhava, Pitradevo Bhava. But then Swami went on to explain a little more about education also, you know, and one of the things which he said was the modern day education serves only to turn humans into demons. That was one point which Swami made, and probably that takes us to that categorization that Swami did of men are of four types: the human, the animal, the demonic, and the divine. Right? And when Swami was talking about the nature of the demonic category, there Swami was saying that indulging in intoxicants, hurting others, acting out of selfishness, looking out for one's own convenience and progress, devoid of kindness and love. Right? So Swami is saying that modern education is literally making people enter that category more than in the human or the divine.
Yeah, because one thing is, I think over several years we've been instilling in every generation that how do you measure a person? So a person, we teach a child that you measure a person by the amount of knowledge they have, for example, or the amount of wealth they have, or the amount of power they have. Whereas when Bhagwan looks at us, what he is looking out for, like in his devotees, is like, how, as he puts over here, how much morality, what about discipline? Right, so these are some of the things that Swami is looking at. How much love do you have for your fellow beings? What kind of attitude do you have, like, towards service? Right, and that is something that is very, very rarely spoken about. In fact, but I do remember this, like, when we were young in our textbook. So we had what is called as a moral class.
Right.
That is a like a separate section or class that was entirely devoted to teaching. The teachers would teach us all about morals and values through the medium of stories. So that was one input, and which I fondly look back to, so that is something that was present, but that is only at the school level. Once you go past your school and you're into, now you begin your first steps into professional studies, that is when the syllabus has absolutely no place, for values education, except perhaps in our institute over here, in Bhagwan's educational system and a couple of others in this country. But largely it is absent, because then what we are signaling to the students is, set all this aside. This was for kids to learn, right? But now set your sights on, like, how you can make your situation better. Your material situation, how can you improve it? That should be the only thing on your mind. So that kind of bankruptcy is present in education. And that has saddened Swami enormously, as he has expressed that time and time again.
Right. Now, I recall an incident which happened in Thrivandan. I might have mentioned this before on the program. When one day Swami was very upset about some PIL which was filed in the Supreme Court, And it was about a person who said that, you know, you should not have moral studies in schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't know where you draw your morals from. You know, is it from one religion or the other? Then it's very difficult to keep education secular if you're going to have a moral class. You know, where are the moral stories going to come from? The dictums, who is going to come from which religion and which text? So there was this PIL, and if I recall right, Swami was pretty upset about this. You know, what is happening to people today? You know, this is the basis of education. This is what education is meant to impart. And these people are saying that you should not have it as part of your syllabus. And a couple of days later, there was a very sensible judge in the Supreme Court who was the person who was hearing this case. And he gave a landmark judgment. He said, this is ridiculous. The very purpose of education is to and produce men and women of character.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to remove this aspect from education, you might as well not impart education at all. And it came in the newspaper that morning, right, 3-4 days later. And Swami had that particular piece read out in Thrai.
Oh.
And Swami said, see, there are good people in the country. Mm-hmm. And you know what a sensible man he is. He's kind of, because it was very, very beautifully worded. You know, we know our judges in the Supreme Court, they have a way of, you know, very beautifully presenting the final verdict.
Right.
So it was almost like probably someone who is very firmly rooted in values would put it across the importance of education. Literally like what we're hearing now, you know, Swami saying that this is the purpose of education. This has got to be passed on to students. So he had said that. And if you don't, what is the whole idea? You're not here to teach.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it finally becomes. You're only helping people grab more and, you know, win the race, push others behind and march ahead.
Right.
In a sense.
Yes, because it ties in with what just a few, you know, segments before we were talking about the distinction between what is Shreyas and what is Prayas. Right. So always like in the case of Shreyas, what is most important is finally that you're looking out for spiritual evolution. Right, whatever actions you are doing are oriented towards spiritual evolution. So any act which furthers that is Shreyas. And if you look at Dharma Vahini, the way Swami defines Dharma also is like this.
Mm.
He says Dharma is anything that fosters your spiritual evolution. Like that should be the basis of how you decide. Right, and so in the end it just comes down to what finally matters to us. You know, whether it is our own like material evolution or whether it is spiritual evolution. So based on that, it, you know, our actions become oriented towards Shreyas or Prayas. And that is why Swami is saying that it is up to the educators. The teaching community has to take up the enormous sense responsibility of instilling that sense of values, that what is finally important. You know, more than, like as Swami says, the progression from I to we to he, that sense of that we belong in a community, we belong in a society and then wanting to contribute to that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of sense, you know, to instill, I think Swami is firmly putting that on the shoulders of the teaching community.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think this morning we were playing a discourse with Swami and Given in Kodai, where Swami says that he says the spiritual path is an individual journey. You know, no one can help you progress spiritually or no one can do sadhana on your behalf. But the path to reach there or the path you take to progress is always societal and communal. You know, you will have to work for the community, you will have to work for the society, you will have to care for others, and that is the only process by which you actually move forward. And I mean, that's pretty much what Swami is saying here. You know, your morality is defined by your role in the society and how well you carry out that role.
Yeah.
And pretty much in the Gurukula system, that's what they would say, that you know, you're given very, very idealistic principles, which are literally tested when once you go out into the society.
Yeah.
And that is why the importance of this final few instructions which are given.
Right.
And I mean, some of them which you were telling, that you know, don't neglect your own welfare. That is important.
Mm.
It's, you know, you can't get fed up and say that, let me become a sannyasi. You know, virakti can never be a reason for sacrifice.
Right.
It should always be vairagya, which comes out of understanding. Viveka should be the source. So it's like you don't neglect your welfare, but you battle it out, keeping very much in your mind these tenets of dharma, without forsaking them.
Got it. Yeah.
And there's this other point which Swami was making. when Swami is talking about this intoxicants, I had read something pretty interesting. We were talking about the limbic system and all that last time. When Swami was saying that given to intoxicants is actually a demonic nature. I think it's a little larger than just probably indulging in liquor or substance abuse.
Okay.
Because what exactly happens when you do substance abuses? The limbic system, when they study, they say that you have this reward system in your brain. And every time you are happy, that happiness is attached to something of purpose. Like suppose you eat food. Food actually nourishes your body, and there is a purpose for you to eat food, and the happiness which comes out of eating food is attached to that purpose. And the same thing with everything. You know, you drink water or you do exercise. They say that one of the ways of remaining cheerful and happy is do exercise, because that exercise helps you in the body. So there is a purpose which is attached to a happiness, which is attached to a certain amount of pleasure. But what happens when you especially do substance abuses, it gives you the ability to find that happiness without going through the process of fulfilling the purpose. So if you look at it that way, when you say that you are given to intoxicants or when you're addicted to intoxicants, I think it's a more general idea of you wanting to have the pleasure part of life without
bypassing the
purpose and the commitment part of it.
Right.
So it's a much larger thing than just saying that, you know, when Swami says the demonic nature is to go for intoxicants, it's not necessarily that one who's an addict alone is, comes under this category of a demonic person. Anybody who wants to enjoy any aspect of life without committing to the purpose of it, I think falls under this category.
Got it.
And that's what Swami was saying, that, you know, when Swami was talking about education is making you demonic, that's what it really does. It is teaching you ways of overlooking your responsibilities and go after your entitlements.
And presently a lot of moral crisis that we see in the world, like even something that is literally playing out live in the Western Hemisphere as we speak, a lot of it, as I analyze, I can just relate it back to people ready to compromise on their principles and values in pursuit of something that Swami regards as very, very ephemeral. Right. So the truth, sincerity, honesty have been literally thrown out of the window, all in the pursuit of something that is like literally insignificant in Swami's eyes, right?
Right.
And it is so, like, I think it's a kind of crisis that we're going through, and hopefully humanity will come out of it, you know. But it's a very strange thing to watch grown-up people who had the privilege of education, who had the privilege of wealth, always living in comfortable circumstances, and them not being able to appreciate, you know, that something like this is really doesn't have as much value as their own, you know, sense of humanness, their own sense of being is so much more valuable than any of this. It's very strange to see how that is getting so short-circuited.
And it's not always purely selfishness. It's not always about an individualistic approach. Like one of the economists who was speaking about the corruption in India, he was saying, you know, when you speak to these middle-level employees in the government who are generally given to a lot of this bribery and corruption and all of that, he said the striking thing is many of them don't even realize that it is wrong. You know, they put it across like, you know, I have a family, I need to feed that family.
Correct.
And it is my duty. You know, it is, he's saying it's a very dangerous thing if you're doing something absolutely wrong and you're masking it with an idea of it is a part of your duty, it is a part of your dharma. He's saying that, you know, here is a family I have, young children, a homemaker wife. I'm the one who's got to feed them, right? It's completely on me. The society is not going to care for them.
Correct.
So it is my duty to take care of the family, and I mean, I have to do whatever it takes.
Right.
So it's not always that purely selfish approach. Like I think in a very advanced society, in a very advanced city, probably it is that individualistic approach. But even in a culture like India where you have family values, even there you could do something absolutely adharmic and, you know, carry on with life thinking that it's part of your dharma.
Correct.
And that's a very dangerous situation.
And which reminds me immediately of something, like, again, taking from a current situation. So one of the, people who, like, I wouldn't like to take names, but a person who's right now in the limelight for the wrong reasons, again, in the US, I was just reading how his daughter, So she, it's somehow the text that she had been sending to her sister, in that it comes out that she realizes that all her life, that all the comforts that she enjoyed and all the nice dresses and parties that she had gone to, all of this had come out of what she terms as father's blood money.
Mm-hmm.
So just to imagine, I'm just placing myself in the father's shoes, that all the time, if this had been his justification, saying that I am doing all this so that my kids have a wonderful life and they enjoy, but at the end of it, if your children are not able to appreciate that, not only that, they revile you for such a thing, then was it all worth it?
Right.
So that's why it becomes very important, that the means is so important rather than the end. Right, and what we pass on, I think a greater responsibility, more than providing for your family, a greater responsibility than you have towards society itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you foster your children so that they stand up straight, their heads are always held up high because of their people of integrity, and that passes on, right? That kind of pervades society itself. Because such a lack of integrity is like a slippery slope, right? It's just one little slip, and pretty soon if you keep justifying, you're going to slide way down.
Right?
And that's what your children will see. And then they will take that to be the median of behavior.
Right.
And then that entire society slowly settles down at, that level. And which is why, time and time again, like, we have to go back to these scriptures. If we tend to look at them as some religious strictures which bind us, which restrict our freedom, then we're getting the totally wrong context of what the sages were trying to convey.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Probably the one last part which Swami was telling about was the ability to have all access to all knowledge, within yourself. I think Swami was talking about the expansiveness of Brahman. No, we must tap the infinite awareness through our limited awareness.
Hmm.
I think that was one of the last things which Swami was saying.
Hmm.
And the closest analogy I can think of is, we all use it. In a mobile phone, you have this SIM card, right? And if you look at it, a SIM card's memory is about, 250 KB or something like that.
Hmm.
You can store a few of your contact numbers on your SIM card.
Hmm.
So it's got a very, very limited memory. But through that SIM card, you can access the internet, which is infinite,
right?
So it's almost like the human brain, which if you have to use only what is stored in the brain, it's going to be so very limited. But as Swami is saying, that if you bring in this ability to connect to the infinite, the amount of knowledge that you can lay hands on is phenomenal. In fact, I remember that's what apparently Swami had said after a discourse. I think in one of the Samukos discourses, Swami was talking about philosophy, and Swami started quoting Western philosophers and Oriental philosophers and all that. And at the end of it, I think either Dr. Gokak or Bhagwantam, I don't know who it was, after the translation, they came up to Swami and said, "Swami, when did you read all these things? How did you gather all this knowledge?" And Swami said, "I don't have the bad habit of reading books." And then Swami said, the human brain, this is not about the divine ability. It's not about my omniscience or anything. He said the very human brain has this ability that if it learns this art of tapping into infinite wisdom, it can gather any knowledge. You can access it from that infinite wisdom. You don't have to know it yourself. Or you don't have to have read about it. It's just that you make yourself so pure that you can connect to that infinite wisdom and draw the, literally like what we do with the internet today. You don't have much memory on your phone, but you can access any amount of memory if you're able to, have the right connection. It's almost like that. So I think that's where Swami stopped, and probably Swami is going to tell us how to do that thing, right? Is that where we stopped?
Yes.
All right. So shall we go to the next clip and continue after that?
ఈనాడు ప్రపంచంలో జరిగేటువంటి యొక్క ఈ దురాచారములకు దుష్కర్మలకు దుష్ట ప్రవర్తులకు మూల కారణము సంకుచితమైన భావమే.
వాట్ ఈస్ ద కాజ్ ఫర్ ఆల్ ద మిజరీ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్? ద కాజ్ ఈస్ ఆల్ రాంగ్ యాక్షన్స్, రాంగ్ ఫీలింగ్.
ఈ స్వార్థము స్వప్రయోజనమే దీనికి మూల కారణము.
ద మెయిన్ రీజన్ ఇస్ సెల్ఫిష్నెస్ అండ్ సెల్ఫ్ ఇంట్రెస్ట్.
కనుకనే గుణమును పోషించుకున్నట్టు తగినటువంటి విద్యను మన దగ్గర కనిపించడం లేదు.
వీ డోంట్ హ్యావ్ ద టైప్ ఆఫ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ టు ఫాస్టర్ ద క్వాలిటీ అండ్ ద క్యారెక్టర్.
కేవలం గ్రంథ పరిచయం మాత్రమే మన దగ్గర కనిపిస్తుంటుండాలి.
వీ హావ్ గాట్ ద ఫెమిలియారిటీ విత్ ది టెక్స్ట్. Only bookish knowledge.
దీని వల్ల ప్రయోజనం ఏమి లేదు.
ఇస్ ఆఫ్ నో యూజ్ అట్ ఆల్.
మన ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ లో మనం ప్రవేశించాలి.
వీ షుడ్ ఎంటర్ ఇన్ టు ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్.
ఈ ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ లో కొన్ని విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క అనుభూతులను కూడా మనం అందుకోవాలి.
ఇన్ దిస్ ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ వీ షుడ్ హ్యావ్ సర్టన్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్.
ఈ ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ ని అనుభవించడానికి మొట్టమొదట పట్టుదల కావాలి, డిటర్మినేషన్ ఉంటుండాలి.
టు హ్యావ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ ఇన్ ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ వీ నీడ్ డిటర్మినేషన్.
అది లేకుండా మాత్రము ఈ ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ ని మనం ఏమాత్రం కూడా సాధించలేము.
వితౌట్ డిటర్మినేషన్ యూ కెన్ నెవర్ హోప్ టు అక్వైర్ ప్రాక్టికల్ నాలెడ్జ్.
ఈనాటి విద్యార్థులందరూ కూడాను 99 భాగమును సూపర్ఫిషియల్ నాలెడ్జ్ లో నిలిచిపోతున్నారు.
99% ఆఫ్ మోడర్న్ స్టూడెంట్స్ ఆర్ ఇన్ సూపర్ఫిషియల్ నాలెడ్జ్ ఓన్లీ.
పుస్తకం మస్తకం ఈ రెండింటిని మాత్రమే ఏకం చేసుకుంటున్నారు.
దే బ్రింగ్ ఎ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ యూనిటీ బిట్వీన్ ద బుక్ అండ్ ద హెడ్ వైస్ వర్స.
ఏమిటి ఇది? ఇలాంటి విద్యల వల్ల దేశానికి కలిగేటువంటి ఉపకారం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ హెల్ప్, వాట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ ప్రాఫిట్ యూ ఎక్స్పెక్ట్ టు ద కంట్రీ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్?
సమాజానికి ఏమి సహాయం చేస్తుంది?
వాట్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ హెల్ప్ ఇస్ రెండర్ టు సొసైటీ?
ఏమాత్రము సహాయం లేదు.
ఇట్ డజంట్ రెండర్ ఎనీ హెల్ప్.
ఏ పని చేసినప్పటికీ తనకు తన సమాజమునకు దీనివల్ల ఏ విధమైనటువంటి ఫలితం ఉంది అని విశాలమైనటువంటి భావంతో విచారణ సల్పాలి.
యూ షుడ్ ఎంక్వైర్ విత్ బ్రాడ్ మైండెడ్నెస్. బికాస్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దర్ యాక్షన్ ఇట్ షుడ్ బి హెల్ప్ టు యూ అండ్ టు సొసైటీ.
కనుకునే పూర్వము ఋషులందరూ కూడాను ఈ ఉపనిషత్ కాలం లోపల పిల్లలను గృహస్థాశ్రమం పంపించే సమయం లోపల ఈ విశాలమైన భావాలంతా కూడాను వారి హృదయాలను నింపి పంపిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
ఇన్ ఏన్షియంట్ టైమ్స్ ఋషి సమన్ స్టూడెంట్స్ అండ్ టాట్ దెమ్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ సచ్ దట్ దే విల్ ఫాస్టర్ బ్రాడ్ మైండెడ్.
ధర్మాన్న ప్రభుత్వ ద్రవ్యం, ఉపయాన్న ప్రభుత్వ ద్రవ్యం, స్వాధ్యాయాన్న ప్రభుత్వ ద్రవ్యం అని ఈ విధంగా బోధిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
They started telling all noble things as they enter into householder's position later.
నాయన మానవునికి కష్టములు సుఖములు వెంటాడుతుంటాయి.
Dear man, you should understand the pleasure and sorrow
following each other.
But you should never have any kinds of fear or
wavering. Under any
circumstances, you should never leave truth.
నీ ధర్మాన్ని మాత్రం వీడవద్దు.
Never leave righteousness.
నీ యొక్క హృదయాన్ని సంతృప్తిపరిచేటువంటి కాన్షియన్స్, అదే ఒక ఆత్మప్రతిజ్ఞ, దానిని మాత్రం నీ విడవద్దు.
యు డోంట్ లీవ్ యువర్ కాన్షియన్సెస్. కాన్షియన్స్ యూ షుడ్ ఫాలో యువర్ సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్.
కనుకని ఆ కాన్షియన్స్ తృప్తిపరచాలి.
సాటిస్ఫై యువర్ కాన్షియన్స్.
ఈనాడు ఏ మానవుడికి కూడా ఆ కాన్షియన్స్ అనేటువంటిదే లేదు. దాన్ని తృప్తిపరచడం అంతకంటే ప్రయత్నం చేయటం లేదు.
నో మ్యాన్ టుడే హ్యాస్ ఎనీ థాట్ ఆఫ్ కాన్షియన్స్. లీవ్ అలోన్ కాన్షియన్స్ సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్.
ఆత్మసాక్షి అని చెప్తూ వచ్చారు.
ద కాన్షియన్స్ ఇస్ అ సార్ట్ ఆఫ్ విట్నెస్.
కనుకనే ఫాలో ది మాస్టర్ అంటే నీ ఆత్మ, నీ కాన్షియన్స్ నీ ఫాలో చేయి.
ఫాలో ది మాస్టర్ మెంట్ ఫాలో యువర్ కాన్షియన్స్.
ఫేస్ ది డెవిల్.
ఫేస్ ది డెవిల్.
ఫైట్ టు ది ఎండ్.
ద ఫైట్ టు ది ఎండ్.
ఫినిష్ ది గేమ్
అండ్ ఫినిష్ ది
గేమ్. ఇది నిజమైనటువంటి యొక్క జీవిత మార్గం.
దిస్ ది రియల్ పాత్ టు లైఫ్.
కానీ ఈ విధమైనటువంటి సత్యసూక్తులు ఈనాటి విద్యలో ఎక్కడా కనిపించటం లేదు.
సచ్ ట్రూత్స్ ఆర్ నాట్ కంటైన్డ్ ఇన్ మోడర్న్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్.
కనుక విద్య అనగా ఆత్మ విద్యయే విద్య, కానీ ఈ అన్ని విద్యలన్నీ కూడా ఇవన్నీ అపర విద్యలు.
ది ఆత్మిక్ విద్య ఈజ్ ట్రూ ఎడ్యుకేషన్. ద అదర్ వన్స్ ఆర్ అపర విద్య.
కేవలం పట్టకోటము కోసమై ఇది నేర్చేటువంటి విద్యలు.
వీ లెర్న్ దోస్ థింగ్స్ ఫర్ ఎ లివింగ్.
ఈ విద్యలు కూడా అవసరమే.
దే ఆర్ ఆల్సో నెసెసరీ.
కానీ దీనితో పాటు
అలాంగ్ విత్ దెమ్
బ్రహ్మ విద్య కూడా, ఆత్మ విద్యను కూడా మనం అలవర్చుకోవాలి.
వీ షుడ్ ఆల్సో లెర్న్ బ్రహ్మ విద్య అండ్ ఆత్మ.
మానవులకు కేవలం శరీరము, ఇంద్రియములు,
ఫర్ మ్యాన్ ద బాడీ అండ్ సెన్సెస్
ఇవి మాత్రమే ఉండినంత మాత్రమున ఆహారము, నిద్ర, భయ ప్రయోజనాలతో జీవితం సార్థకం గావించుకోవచ్చు.
విత్ ద బాడీ అండ్ సెన్సెస్ వన్ కెన్ రీచ్ అండ్ ఎంజాయింగ్ ఆల్ ద ఫుడ్ అండ్ ద స్మెల్.
అతీతమైన మనస్సు, బుద్ధి, ఆత్మ కూడా ఉంటుండాలి.
బియాండ్ దిస్ దేర్ ఇస్ మైండ్, ఇంటెలెక్ట్ అండ్ ఆత్మ.
వీటి యొక్క తృప్తిని కూడా కొంతవరకు మనకు దృష్టిలో పెట్టుకోవాలి.
వన్ షుడ్ కీప్ ఇన్ లుక్స్ ద సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్ ఆఫ్ దోస్ థింగ్స్.
కానీ ఈనాటి మానవుడు కడుపు నిండుకు అన్నము, కంటి నిండుకు నిద్ర, ఇంటి నిండుకు పిల్లలు, ఇంత మాత్రమే చాలు, ఇదే జీవితం యొక్క పరమావధి అని భావిస్తున్నారు.
మ్యాన్ టుడే థింగ్స్ దట్ హ్యావింగ్ ఫుడ్ కంప్లీట్లీ అండ్ హ్యావింగ్ ప్లెంటీ ఆఫ్ చిల్డ్రన్ అట్ హోమ్ అండ్ స్లీప్ టు హిస్ కంటెంట్. హీ థింక్స్ దట్
ఒక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క సంకుచితమైనటువంటి భావమే.
ఇట్స్ ఎ నారో ఫీలింగ్.
దీనికంటే ఇంకా అతీతమైనటువంటిది ఉంటుండాలి.
బట్ దేర్ సంథింగ్ ట్రాన్సెండెంట్.
మానసిక తృప్తి అత్యవసరము.
ద మెంటల్ సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్ ఇంపార్టెంట్.
వీటి వల్ల మనకు మానసిక తృప్తి కలగటం లేదు.
అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ యూ డోంట్ హ్యావ్ మెంటల్ సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్.
ఈ మానసిక తృప్తి కేవలము ఒక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క శ్రేయోమార్గంలోనే మనకు సార్థకమవుతుంది.
ద సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్ ఈస్ పాసిబుల్ త్రూ శ్రేయోమార్గ.
శ్రేయోమార్గములుగా దీనికి అతీతమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యమైనటువంటి భావం రావాలి.
శ్రేయోమార్గ రిక్వైర్స్ ద డివైన్ ఫీలింగ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ బియాండ్.
ఇది మానవత్వానికంటే ఉన్నత స్థాయిని పొందేటువంటిది.
దేర్ ఆర్ ఎ హైయర్ లెవెల్ వెన్ కంపేర్ టు దట్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్ లెవెల్.
అది దివ్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వం.
దట్ ఈస్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ ద డివైన్.
దివ్య భావమే మానవునియందు లేకపోతే మానవత్వమే శూన్యమైపోతుంది.
వెన్ దెర్ ఆర్ నో డివైన్ ఫీలింగ్స్ ద హ్యూమన్ నేచర్ ఈస్ ఇన్ వెయిన్.
కనుక విద్యార్థులారా,
సో స్టూడెంట్స్,
మానవత్వాన్ని పెంచుకునేటువంటి యొక్క విధానాన్ని మనం గుర్తించాలి.
వీ షుడ్ రికగ్నైజ్ ద ఫ్యాక్ట్ హౌ టు డెవలప్ ది హ్యూమన్.
మానవుడు మానవుడుగానే జీవించాలి.
మ్యాన్ షుడ్ లివ్ యాజ్ మ్యాన్.
తోటి మానవుడిని ప్రేమించలేని మానవుడు,
ద మ్యాన్ హూ కెనాట్ లవ్ ద ఫెలో మ్యాన్.
తల్లిని ప్రేమించలేని మానవుడు,
ద వన్ హూ కెనాట్ లవ్ మదర్.
భార్యను ప్రేమించలేని మానవుడు,
ద వన్ హూ కెనాట్ లవ్ వైఫ్.
మానవుని ప్రేమించలేని మానవుడు,
ఇఫ్ యూ కెనాట్ లవ్ ఫెలో మ్యాన్.
భగవంతుని ఏ రీతిగా ప్రేమించగలరు?
హౌ డు యూ ఎక్స్పెక్ట్ హిమ్ టు లవ్ గాడ్?
ఇది అసాధ్యం.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ఇంపాసిబుల్. ఇట్ ఇస్ ఇంపాసిబుల్.
కనుక మొట్టమొదట నీ తోటి మానవులను నీవు ప్రేమించడానికి ప్రయత్నించు.
ఫస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ యూ లవ్ యువర్ ఫెలో మ్యాన్.
కేవలం ప్రేమ ప్రేమ అనేటువంటిది అప్పటికప్పటికి పెరిగి అప్పటికప్పటికి క్షీణించేటువంటిది కాదు.
లవ్ ఇస్ నాట్ దాట్ విచ్ అరైజెస్ ఇన్స్టెంటేనియస్.
పెరిగి క్షీణించేటువంటి ప్రేమ ప్రేమనే కాదు. పెరిగి క్షీణించేటువంటి ప్రేమ ప్రేమనే కాదు.
ఇస్ నాట్ ట్రూ లవ్ ఇఫ్ ఇట్ రైజెస్ అండ్ డిక్లైన్స్.
ఎప్పుడూ పెరుగుతూ పెరుగుతూనే పోవాలి.
ద లవ్ విల్ బి ఆన్ కంటిన్యూస్.
అనంతమైనటువంటి తత్వము.
ద లవ్ ఇస్ ఇన్ఫినిట్.
దీనినే లవ్ ఈజ్ గాడ్ లివ్ ఇన్ లవ్.
That is called love is God, live in love.
Ante kaani ee laukikamainatundi oka deenito kaadu manam mudipeyesukovasindi.
We should not relate it to worldly matters.
Ilanti pavitramaina chinna chinna padamlatone Chaitanya Upanishattu vidyarthulaku chakkani upadesham gaavistu vachindi.
Such noble truths are explained in simple words in Chaitanya Upanishad.
Inkanu indulo vidyarthulaku avasaramainatundi oka ముఖ్యమైన అంశాలు కూడాను ఇందులో ఉంటున్నాయి.
దెర్ ఆర్ చీఫ్ పాయింట్స్ మెన్షన్ నెససరీ ఫర్ స్టూడెంట్స్ ఇన్ ద సేమ్ టెక్స్ట్.
తరువాత కార్యక్రమం ఉంటున్నది కనుక ఈ విషయాలను ముందు మనం చర్చించుకుందాం.
దెర్ ఇస్ ఎ ప్రోగ్రామ్ ఫాలోయింగ్ దిస్, వీ షల్ డిస్కస్ దెమ్ లేటర్.
విద్యార్థులారా,
స్టూడెంట్స్,
కేవలము లౌకికమైన
that was the next clip, and as Swami was saying there, he said there's a program and so we'll wind up, but of course Swami speaks for at least 8 minutes after that. Probably we'll reserve that for later. But as of now, Swami was continuing with the difference between the education that must be imparted and that is being imparted as of now, and how many of us can relate to that when Swami is talking about practical knowledge and bookish knowledge. Right, so Swami has spoken about that so much, and I know, I mean, even though that we've heard it from Swami, we couldn't help but doing that, you know, study from the books, mm-hmm. go to the exam, yeah. write it, and as Swami would say it every time, we forget it after that, and then we empty our heads and again fill it again and again go and empty it for another exam.
Correct. From the management point of view also, when I look at it, see, like, when I entered my MBA, one of the first books that was given to us was called Man Management.
Right.
It is a collection of discourses that Bhagwan had given to management students. Very, very fortunate ones to have received that instruction directly from Bhagwan. Again, like, if you look at the perspective that Swami brought to management, it is like so very distinct, like, from what the traditional perspective is. So if I, Swami's way of looking at a company is that it is composed of people. That the best, the most important resource in the company is people.
Right.
However, if you look at the way business is analyzed today, it is more in terms of, you know, the numbers, like you've got assets, you've got liabilities, a host of ratios, and then performances, and in fact, so much so that numbers dictate how the company is run. So,
and how you numbers, treat people too.
Yeah, if numbers dictate that you have to throw a few people out, you will. And that is, you know, the angle of pure analysis, objective, without bringing in any people equations into it, right? But if you look at the leaders, the true leaders who are, or the companies that are spoken about as being very good companies that had lasted for, you know, years, you look at those companies, the heads, the CEOs have always regarded their people as being very important. Right, the way they look after the people, they make sure that the people are looked after, and it is only in very, very extreme circumstances that they want to lay off, they have to lay off, you know, with that option that you can always come back when these circumstances are better. There are like a very handful of such leaders who truly bothered or cared about their people. But if you look at Swami's perspective, it is entirely man management.
Mm-hmm.
How to manage the people who then deliver.
Right.
And that is the focus. We should, that is the kind of focus that he used to bring. And at that time, it did not make much sense to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that because it takes a lot of growing up, maturing, experience, you know, being among people, and then you realize, oh, this is why, you know, Swami was speaking mm-hmm. about man management.
Right.
And it always see that it is not among us students, maybe we couldn't appreciate it. But the moment a senior person, somebody who's been in the industry for very long, they look at it, they would say, yes, you know, management is all about managing people. Mm-hmm. That is the most important perspective. So now we can see it really with our own eyes, you know, as mm-hmm. we have stepped up into responsibilities. It is all about actually managing people.
Right.
And managing in the sense not to look upon people as, you know, they have to be disciplined, that they have, it's more like they got that inherent divinity in them, that ability to work with happiness, fulfill on their responsibilities, and what is coming in their way.
Mm.
You know, look that, how to nourish them, how to empower them to deliver the way they're actually capable. What is coming in their way?
Right.
So that is a kind of inquiry which Swami, you know, brings in into the management program.
That's precisely what Swami was saying. Like, what actions will help me as well as the society?
Yeah.
It's, I think there'll always be a middle path. Probably you don't have to give up your interest completely.
Correct.
But by giving up a little, if it can benefit another person, I think that is what Swami would always advocate. In fact, it reminds me, I think after 2008, when there was this lot of layoffs in many of these international companies, one of my friends was saying that, you know, some of these companies were resorting to ways which were, I mean, purely driven by numbers. In fact, they would employ a consultant company, which would come with probably a computer program. And you have to just key in all the performances of all your employees.
Mm.
And you say that this is the amount of loss I'm making right now. I want to make lesser loss. Or this is the profit I'm making. I want to make more profit. So where can I cut corners, right? And it's literally fed into the computer. And the computer says that, all right, you just lay off these people.
Mm.
Without any track record of their value to the company. It's all purely based on numbers. And you just finally end up getting a slip the next day. And I mean, it's just out of the blue. It's literally like that. And comparing that with, I think one of our alumni was sharing about when he had joined a corporate, and there was one particular unit which was labeled a sick unit, and they wanted to wind it up. So they put him in charge of that, and they said, "You just go and start winding up that thing because you want to lay off mm-hmm. everybody there and shut it down." So he spoke to the management and he said, if there is any chance of reviving that, can I try? So he said, yeah, you can try, but we've given up completely on that. So he goes there, and I think there are about 40, 50 employees there. And he was only wondering that a sudden layoff would literally, you know, it would be a big bolt on all their families. And it was, I think, a semi-urban setup or something like that. And in that unit, there was also a very elderly accountant who was literally managing the whole thing. But he was not able to, he was not the best of managers, but he was a very good man. So they were very keen on, you know, sending him out first. He said, even if you want to revive, ensure that that man is sent out so that the unit at least survives for a while. So this boy went in there and he tried to keep everybody there and, you know, make the unit function, especially this elderly man, because he knew that he was just a few years before his retirement and it would be disastrous for him to have a, you know, lose his job at that point in time. You know, it's a very difficult situation in life for him. So he ensured that he doesn't lose his job. He ensured that, you know, he came around, his performance picked up, the unit's performance picked up. And it came to a point where the company was no more looking at shutting that unit down. So this boy was saying that one day he was just sitting and looking at the accounts and everything had started turning around. And this elderly gentleman was there. And in the course of the conversation, that elderly person very casually remarked, you know, sir, you were able to do all this. So many people have tried. None of them were able to do it. You were able to do this because you're a Swami student. And this person was completely shocked because he had not spoken about Swami to anybody in the unit. Nobody knew that he's from Satya Sai University. And I mean, he never revealed to anybody that even he was a devotee of Swami. So he was really surprised and he said, "Who told you? How did you know?" He said, "Yeah, I could make out, you know, your approach was different, the way you were trying to deal with things were different, and I knew that, you know, your background must be something else. So that's how I sensed it, and I figured out later that you are from Swami's college." So literally, I mean, of course, he was a person who was probably carrying out what Swami would expect of a student, and that credit goes to him. But this is what Swami would expect, you know, any situation you go into, can you think of everybody's welfare?
Yeah.
And take a decision, even if it means compromise on your own you know, profits or on your own performance at some at a stage.
Right. And yeah, because that's what I wanted to bring out was that what the books will tell you, what plain analysis will tell you, is entirely different from what wisdom tells you. Right. And that wisdom is gained from what? Being open to what life is trying to teach you. And that's what happens, like when you tend to get immersed in books and you shut out what life is trying to teach you, because that is the laboratory in which we live, in which the life itself conducts experiments with us, right? And it's, and we are judged really by how we perform in those experiments.
Right.
And of course we may be engaged in so many other things incidental, but what is primarily important is how we engage with life.
Mm.
Right, and that's why Swami is saying that there's a very big danger of us getting merged with our textbooks.
Mm.
And that's why that bookish knowledge, as Swami would say, the biggest danger is shutting out life altogether, you know, to the, like, so for many people their career is important, their acquiring knowledge, their academics become so important that they shut out so many experiences in their life. And much later, you know, when they grow up, they realize, oh, I missed out on so much in the pursuit of just like one single objective.
Right. I think that point which Swami made was very important. He said determination is essential for practical knowledge. Because it's almost like nothing can be learned unless you pursue that for a while.
You know, yes.
I think when you go by the textbook, that's what happens.
Mm.
You know, you try something, it doesn't work out, then you try something else. I mean, if you want to learn lessons from life, to an extent you really have to stick out your neck and say that, you know, let me endure this for some time.
Correct.
And see if there is a lesson to be learned.
Yes.
Because most of the time, you know, especially people who have this habit of jumping jobs.
Right.
That's what really happens. They don't take the time to figure out what is wrong within me because of which this is happening.
Very important.
And they say that this is not working out, let's go to another job. So without that determination, that practical knowledge never comes. You know, you miss the lessons along the path, as you said. You know,
Correct, because you know what Carl Jung, you know, he would say that the more things change, the more they remain the same. So when you go to some other situation, within no time you're going to recreate exactly the same thing
situation
that you're trying to run away from, right? Or he would say that the more you resist, the more something persists. Right, so in that sense, as you said, it is very, very important to get that feedback. Actually, what is it within me that is creating this kind of situation time and again?
Right.
Like whether we like to admit it or not, like you have a problem with this particular boss, you run away from that and join some other company, you're going to see exactly that. And
right.
When you were saying this, I was literally smiling to myself because this was exactly what a friend of mine was narrating to me. You know, he said that he was working in a particular organization and he was so disturbed by the what he called as the unstructured or disorganized way in which that institution was running. So he said that I was not able to learn anything in this kind of place. So he said, what if I transplant myself into another company which is known for being very organized, very structured, and he thought that things will change. And he did join that particular company, and yes, it is a structured, very well managed company. However, the division that he joined happened to be like something that was newly set up.
Okay.
So it was still going through its birthing, birth pangs, so to speak. And he said that didn't change. Again, when he moved to another company, he realized that this kind of thing is following him everywhere. So that's when he suddenly woke up, he started thinking to himself, what is life trying to teach me out here? So what the books are saying is entirely different. Yes, you need structure. Yes, you need a well-set procedure. But here he was finding that destiny was putting him time and again in a particular, very, very particular situation. So he started thinking that what is it that is driving me to, attracting me to such, scenarios.
I mean, yeah. Exactly what you go through in exam. You know, if you don't clear your 7th standard, You keep coming back to the 7th standard, you know.
Yeah.
You can run away, have a vacation, but you come back and land up in the same class.
Exactly.
Literally, that's what happens, because, and especially if you probably turn to a guru like Swami, you can be sure that that's going to happen to you.
Absolutely.
You
know, because turn the searchlight,
you know,
on.
Yes, I think you had used that phrase once, you know, an adjective for compassion of Swami.
Ruthless
compassion, right.
Yeah.
That is the phrase. Literally, because if that's got to be learnt, and there's no better time to learn it than under the tutelage of someone like Swami.
Exactly.
And that's the most...
No, which is why Swami says, no, follow the master, face the devil. So, facing the devil is inevitable.
Right.
Right. But it is when you follow the master that he gives you that endurance to fight to the end and then finish the game. And that endurance principle again is so very important. And again, I feel whether in our present generation are we able to transmit that
right
quality. Because more and more, if this generation is all going to be about instant gratification, and the way we seek gratification, like I can see it in myself, that I'm so hooked to when the next message is going to come into my mobile. Right? And when I wake up, the first thing is I look for, okay, in WhatsApp and the various texting apps, like what is the latest that has come. And I can notice that even when I'm in a conversation, if there's a lull in the conversation, my hand is actually reaching out to the mobile.
Mm.
And I can see, you know, that in the... So when I try to read about what this is all about, and very clear, you know, that exact hormone, dopamine, which you mentioned some time ago, which is what is reinforcing several of the good behaviors.
Mm.
You know, the good behaviors like exercise or being of service to somebody. Like all of these, they release that dopamine, so it reinforces. So we look to repeating that action so that, you know, that release, we enjoy that release again.
Right.
And the research has found out that this same release is happening even when we, you know, read a text or a new message, you know, something new that has come.
Something which gives a thrill.
That is giving a thrill, and now we have become addicted to that. So that instant gratification, if we become a society which suddenly is led to believe that if anything is worth doing only if the results are instant, right, then would we forsake something like the spiritual path, which is a very, very long drawn out process? when it comes to a dilemma between what is a dharmic act and what is beneficial to the person, whether we will keep choosing a personal benefit over dharma.
Mm.
You know, so that is something as a society we got to really watch out for. Because more and more the number of choices that we have are so varied now that instant gratification is within, you know, it's within our reach
actually,
all the time.
That's what happens, you know, going back to what happens in this, in the brain, dopamines and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, when it happens, when you're talking about substance abuse, you're talking of this whole process, which probably happens over a few years or months, happening in a very short time.
Mm.
You know, the amount of release of those dopamines is manifold. Or some of these substances, what they do is they allow these dopamines to remain in those synapses for long. That's how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that the way the brain reacts to it is over the period of time, it says that, look, I'm having an overdose of dopamine in the brain, so I need to cut down the receptors which actually receive these dopamines, which actually lead you to feel happiness. So what happens is they say that over a period of time, the same actions which gave you a X amount of joy, that joy keeps reducing over a period of time.
Correct.
So you find that, you know, there is a host of activities which no more give you happiness.
Got that.
And they say that that's what leads to a boredom which very quickly, you know, starts rolling into depression.
Right.
And that's when it becomes very difficult. They say that, you know, you can revive the person with medication, but you need to find something new which will make that person happy.
Correct.
Which becomes very difficult.
Right. Moving along, again, I think it's a very subtle thing that Swami says here. So when we say follow the master, and Swami very quickly adds that follow the master means to follow your conscience. You know, that is very, very important, because the master that is being spoken about is not somebody external. Right, and that master, even the external master, is a temporary manifestation of something that is already within. That is the beauty of the Indian theology or the Indian system of guru. You know, so even the guru himself, when he instructs, he always refers refers to himself as something that's a temporary manifestation, right? And whereas the more the all ever present constant, in this case Swami is indicating that it is within you as your own conscience. So really you need not seek someone else to guide you, you know, somebody external to you, right? And it is always present within you as the voice that is telling you what is right and what is wrong.
Right.
And that's why Swami is saying, follow the master very clearly, he says, means to follow your conscience.
Right. And, I mean, it's not only in this discourse, I think I've come across many discourses, almost in no discourse, Swami defines the master as anything other than the conscience.
Right.
Almost every time. And it's really surprising, you know, here is Swami, who is standing in front of us as a guru, as our guide, as our friend. But never Swami said, follow the master, follow me.
Correct.
He said, follow the master, and the master is the conscience. I think that's a very, very important point which you made. And the beauty is, you know, every time he says, follow the master, the next is face the devil, which means that following the master does not mean that you're not going to encounter the devil.
Very important.
You have to be prepared that there will be devils on the way.
Exactly.
And you need to face them.
Yes. Because, see, a lot of us, like, sometimes when we think about our real intentions, like when we pray to God, if you have to really confront that, sometimes we, when we pray to God, what we are looking for is comfort,
right?
That I want relief from worldly pain. And yes, like God in His infinite mercy does do that. But if you truly look at it, what God wants is for us to turn to Him, is for that sustenance, that enthusiasm with which we will now face the obstacles.
Right.
Like, and I recall, you know, one very nice interaction that happened between Swami and Anil Kumar sir out there in the Kulwanthal. So this was a period when Swami was apparently upset with all the students.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a very, very long period. I think it extended over 6 months. And usually, you know, in the evening, Swami would be out talking to the students, and almost every day Swami would send us into peals of laughter, you know, some funny thing that Swami would raise, and generally there'd be like very lively Kulwanthal sessions, right? But over a period of 6 months, suddenly Kulwanthal very quiet, because Swami would come for darshan sometimes before the students and then go into the interview room and stay there literally till the bhajan would begin.
Mm.
And it was really a very dreary time for everyone, I'm sure. And one day, you know, Swami came out, and Anil Kumar sir, he made bold, you know, he wanted to tell Swami that you're not coming out nowadays and all that. Then the way he wanted to put it was, Swami, all of these boys, they have so many letters to give Swami. Swami said, you know, like nothing, they don't have anything important to convey. Then Anil Kumar sir said, but Swami, what if they have emergencies? And Swami, so beautifully, he said, my students will never have an emergency. Now, we might take that to mean that, you know, Swami is going to ward off every single obstacle or every such, any circumstances that come in our life. But that is not true. What Swami said is very, very profound. That for a student, that is somebody who really studies Bhagwan, what his teachings are all about, there cannot be an emergency. In the sense that they are so very, very steadfast in that faith, that whatever is coming in their way is something that Bhagwan himself has ordained, and because it is good for them. It physically, if you stand by that, yes, Bhagwan said there is no emergency, and an emergency, as it normally does, does crop up, then what you lose then is that trust and faith in Bhagwan.
Right.
But what he says is very clear, that when you are with me, you cannot be calling it an emergency. It's my blessing, it's my grace. It's so very, you know, like Bhagwan's statements, like if you take it too literally, you're going to fall into several such traps. Right?
You're talking about following the master and facing the devil. I mean, one thing about Swami is, I mean, I've not read about other gurus and what they have to say, but some people who follow a lot of gurus, I've heard this from them, that Swami is one person who does not say that, come to me, I'll solve your problems.
Right.
And in fact, on the contrary, Swami always says that I will empower you to face your problems.
Mm.
You know, you have to accept your problems.
Right.
And I mean, and this is Swami's words from the 50s and 60s. You know, we might think that, you know, now Swami has a huge following, so Swami can say this and get away with that. Swami was never, even in the 40s and 50s, those devotees who took all the trouble to go to Swami, Swami would say them, this is what you have to face in life, you have to face it.
Right.
You know, I will stand by your side, I will protect you and I will give you the strength to face it,
right.
But you will have to face it. I remember, I think just a couple of days back I was reading, there was this one Mr. Prasad Rao from Hyderabad, one of those very early devotees in Hyderabad who were instrumental in setting up Shivam and all of that. So he had come to Parthi along with a friend. Apparently his wife had a problem because of which I think she was bedridden for many years. So he was hoping to come to Swami and pray to Swami to come and cure her. So he came and he came sat for darshan, and the first day Swami did not look at them. I think the second or third day Swami sent word through one of the people in the ashram saying that there is one Mr. Prasad Rao. Call him, tell him that Swami is calling. So he was surprised because nobody there knew that that was his name and that was his designation. So he goes in and the first thing Swami tells him is, you know, I'm coming to Hyderabad next month and I'll be staying in such and such a person's house. You come to me, I will come to your house and I will see your wife. And they were very happy, and exactly as promised, Swami went to their house. And Swami went to this lady and, you know, very, very beautifully Swami explained to her. And Swami tells her, Amma, see, what you're going through is something you have to go through. Swami says, I can cure you now. It's not at all a big thing for me. I can cure you, but at some time later you will have to face it.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami tells her, see, you have a very beautiful family, a family which is so supportive. This is the best time for you to undergo this and finish this off. So Swami tells her, don't pray to me for me to cure you. Just undergo this. And Swami says, I am with you. I'll be with you. I will give you the strength.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's precisely Swami's message from ever, you know,
correct,
to people, that you can't run away from what you have to face, and don't come to me to run away from what you have to face.
True. Because it's not like, you know, that Bhagwan, as very rightly you said, it's not that he cannot alleviate those circumstances, and time to time he does, you know, when, but he's the best judge of,
right,
when it when needs to be, yeah, when it's in totally in his hands. When you were saying this, I recalled, you know, my grandmother, she had told me very long back when she was herself pretty young and she had come to Prashanthi Liman, Swami had called them for an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And this was my grandma's very first interaction with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami very nicely, he looks at her and he says that, I know that right now your family is very poor, but in a few years time, you'll always, I assure you this much, that you'll always have clothes to wear, you'll always have food to eat, which is important because she had come to Parthi in rags, you know.
Oh.
And their family had sometimes gone days without food, or
mm-hmm.
they would just mix water and rice, you know. That was the sometimes they had to go through situations like that. But this is what she said, that Bhagwan said that your situation will improve, but you know, he made a very sorry face. He said, but you know about your sister, I cannot do anything, she'll always be like that.
Oh.
And to date that situation is true.
My God.
It was, you know, so like my grandma says, you know, she can never forget Swami's that very sorry face he put, you know. I wish I could do something about it, but then this is how it is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she says nothing has changed, her sister still remains poor, and no matter what they do, you know, even she tried to contribute but nothing changed. But there it is, as you said, like what Bhagwan does is like so much, as they say, that parable of that somebody trying to help the chicken come out of the egg,
right.
You know, like that child,
mm-hmm.
the parent is watching, is showing the child, see this very beautiful process of birth as the chick is trying mm-hmm. to come out of that egg. And the child suddenly starts feeling that pang, you know, the small little tiny thing, and doesn't have the strength. You know, how will this come out of the mm-hmm. hard shell? And so he tries to get that hammer to break that. And then the parent cautions that if you do that, then the first thing that will happen is that small little fledgling will not be able to survive life.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way it gains strength is through this process of knocking at that hard shell.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And another thing I recall, you know, like a very short summary. My mother, you know, she had this debilitating, like, rheumatoid arthritis. And Bhagwan, he told her to go off medicines. He said that I will give Vibhuti and you'll be all right. Right? And he created Vibhuti. He gave a lot of Vibhuti packets to us. And he said, like, just take this every day with a little bit of water. And that's what she did. She set aside all the medicines she had. And for several days she felt, that her condition was improving. Suddenly one day I noticed that her left leg had started swelling. So I asked her what happened. She said, the medicines that Swami gave me have got over. So I decided, okay, I'll speak to Bhagwan and get Vibhuti. And so that day, during Darshan, I remember sitting front and Swami looks at me, he asks what happened. So I said, Swami, like this, my mother's left leg has swollen. And Swami was looking very, very impassive, cold, not that concern, none of that was there in his face. So I asked him, when I asked him like this, and Swami said, why is her leg swollen? I said, Swami, because the Vibhuti you gave got over. And then Swami, very still impassive face, he's looking at me, what about the Vibhuti I gave you? So two things, one is because he knows that I never opened any one of those packets, so they're still lying as they were. So, I was thinking that Swami would call me lovingly, create some more Vibhuti inquire. All he said was, do this. But I remember that the feeling at that time was something like, how perhaps a young bird, all it is there in the nest, and the mother bird has been every day going out and bringing food for the bird to eat. So much so that all the fledgling has to do is open its mouth and the mother bird will feed that. But there comes a day when the mother bird will knock, will kick that fledgling out of the nest. And I felt exactly like that, So suddenly you have that sense that you're falling, you're falling to the ground. But all of a sudden you begin to flap your wings, right? And that is what Bhagwan wants. Ultimately, when Bhagwan says that you and I are one, the only difference is that I know it but you do not. God wants us to stand in His own image. It is not that He wants that the position, pyramidal position, and everybody else has to be below Him. Right. Which is the reason, He kicks us out because we will begin to then soar on our own.
Absolutely.
Okay? That is the reason.
Really, especially when Swami is saying this, follow the master, face the devil.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can go endlessly about that, because one thing is following the master does not mean you can escape the devil. The other thing is, even as you face the devil, you have to follow the master. And sometimes following the master might itself be facing the devil. And reminded of an incident which Professor Kasturi would say.
Right.
That at some time, I think in the 60s, he had a back problem. Something more like a slip disc. Of course, he had not got it diagnosed. So he was struggling to sit and write, and he was struggling to walk around. So that time somebody told him, there's this devotee who had this similar problem. And Swami told him to lie down on the floor without anything, flat on the floor for, one or two hours, and then he was fine. So Professor Kasturi was trying out that diagnosis, which was meant for another devotee, by lying down on the floor. And somebody knocked at his door and they said, Swami is calling you. So Professor Kasturi, with great difficulty, got down, walked down the stairs and climbed up Swami's thing and went up. And he was thinking probably Swami is calling him to, tell him what Bangaru you are, back problem, do this. But Swami was, as you were saying, pretty cold, and he pointed to a stack of calendars, and Swami told Kasturi, take all these, go to each room and hang it yourself and come and report to me. So he had to take this entire stack of calendars, go to every room in the ashram. I think that time there was only East Prashanti, of course, and maybe South Prashanti. Swami said, go to every room, first floor, second floor, knock the door, go inside, hang it yourself, and then come and report to me. So here was Professor Kasturi carrying this. I think he had a Sevadal to probably help him. But everybody, every building or block he was walking into, people were coming and offering him help. You give the calendars to us, we'll do the thing. He said, no, I can't do that. Swami has given me this work. And, he was grudging, and he was really in pain. He was not able to walk.
Great.
So he did all that and finally finished. It took him 2 or 3 hours. He finished all that. He went to Swami and reported that he had done. And Swami dismissed him. He said, yeah, I can go ahead. The work is over. It's only then he realized that his back problem was gone, in that process. He was saying that it was looking so heartless of Swami to put him through that, but he didn't realize that that was itself the remedy for what he was suffering. So probably, we could go on endlessly about those two Fs of the four Fs. But I think the time in our studio says that it's time to wind up. We'll probably continue the next week with what Swami had said in this last part of you know, where Swami was talking about what has to be imparted in the name of education to the students, and what the Taittiriya Upanishad says about that. The last few lines which Swami said, we'll continue with that. But for now, dear listeners, we'll have to conclude this, and we most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. Do join us again next week at 7:30 for the next episode of Shravanam, Vandanam, Nididhyasanam. Thank you for joining us. Jai Sai Ram.